everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's April 2023, and this is episode 335, which is a conversation about the Oscar-winning film, The Whale. On this episode, I'm joined by Cole Burgett. He is a graduate of Dallas Theological Seminary and the Moody Bible Institute. He teaches classes for high school and college students in Bible exposition and systematic theology, and he is a regular contributing writer for the Christian Research Journal. Cole has written an in-depth film review of the Oscar-winning movie, The Whale, and his review is called Let Faith Oust Fact, A Review of The Whale. And you can read his review for free at our website, equip.org. Cole, it's good to have you on.
It's always good to be here. Thank you for having me.
So our listeners may follow or may not follow the Oscars, but the Oscars were just last month, and this film was nominated for one Oscar, and that was for Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role for this film, The Whale. And this film, actually, when I saw it, I said to my husband, it seems like it's got this really vibe of a play. And it was a play. It was originally a play, and the playwright was instrumental with the screenplay, and it became this film directed by Darren Aronofsky. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the film and its plot and what it's about?
Sure. So The Whale is a film written by Samuel D. Hunter and directed by Darren Aronofsky. The film has received critical acclaim due mostly to the complexity of the makeup and prosthetics. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong about this, but I thought it won a second Academy Award for makeup.
It did. It did, actually. Yeah. It did win for best makeup.
Best makeup and best actor. And that was the other thing, is it's Brendan Fraser's portrayal of the central character, Charlie. The storyline of the film revolves around Charlie, who is a morbidly obese recluse who pays the bills by teaching online college English courses. The primary tension of the film is between Charlie and his estranged daughter, Ellie, played by Sadie Sink, as he tries to reconnect with her in what becomes clear very early on in the film are the last days of his life. His eating habits are quite literally killing him. Now, the whole affair is then complicated by the arrival of Thomas, played by Ty Simpkins, an evangelical Christian missionary whose attempts to proselytize Charlie invoke the ire of Charlie's nurse and semi-caretaker, Liz, played by Hong Chau. These characters all form the major interactions that Charlie has over the final week of his life. And as the story unfolds, each character's motivations are carefully excavated so that the film becomes, like many of Aronofsky's films, a kind of conversation on the subject of faith. And that's a general overview of the film.
The film starts out and it is kind of chronicling probably the last week of Charlie's life. It has, you know, each day that goes by. And you mentioned Sadie Sink. And if anybody watches the show Stranger Things, she's from that. And then Brendan Fraser used to be really a big actor in demand back in the 90s, and this is kind of his comeback performance. And there have, you know, the film itself got mixed reviews, but pretty much everybody thought that Brendan Fraser's critics, rather, you know, performance was one of the strongest things about the film itself. And it's, while it is kind of a set piece, as I mentioned, it's got very mature themes, I'd say. And you mentioned some Christian characters in there. So dealing with Christianity and faith is very central in this film. So first of all, I want to ask you,
you know, should Christians see the film? And, you know, especially parents, you know, what about kids that might, well, teenagers that might want to see the film because they recognize Sadie Sink, for example, from Stranger Things? What should Christians be aware of before they watch this film?
Well, regarding parents, the first thing they should know right out of the gate is this is absolutely not a film for young children. And I would say that even younger teenagers should not see it. Apart from the roughness of the language, there is pretty blatant sexual content in literally the first scene of the film. And much of this has to do with homosexuality. It is a very modern film in this way, very much a part of the cultural zeitgeist. But what I do not want to have happen is these warnings deterring thoughtful parents of mature, older teenagers from seeing the film all together. I teach high school Bible, and the mother of one of my students took her kid to see the film and found it absolutely riveting. And as a result, we actually spent a few minutes in class discussing some of the film's themes and ideas and its portrayal of faith and issues of homosexuality. So I can say with confidence that though this is not a particularly family-friendly production, this is one of the few films in recent memory that actively tries to interface and interact with the faith of the viewer. It's a film that really does invite interaction, and not just from secular audiences, but viewers of a particular evangelical Christian bend. And that is important. It is extremely important because this is not the conventional Christians are evil film, because it really is a character study. All of these characters are very flawed characters. And the question of how faith is maintained in the face of those flaws forms a major theme in the film. And I've seen several outlets actually call this a religious film. Now, I just want to be clear, I would not call it that. And many mainstream news outlets do not. But there are some less known but no less thoughtful reviewers who do see this as a kind of redefinition of what a religious film can be. And I think as Christians especially, that is something worth paying attention to. So not a film for children, but perhaps older teenagers and adults can find a lot to think through and talk about here.
I do think that while I agree that it's not a religious film per se, I would say that one of the main characters in a sense is Christianity and its impact on the lives of some of the characters in the film. And that might be due to the author of the original play, the playwright who wrote this particular story. So can you tell us a little bit about the origin material of this film? And it is also between the play and the film, there's some changes that the playwright made, and it has to do with the faith of one of the main characters that you mentioned, Thomas, who is a missionary that we see at the very beginning, who is supposedly sent out from a local evangelical church of kind of the type, I would say, that focuses on end times.
Yeah, regarding the specific character of Thomas, I won't go too into the weeds on this because I do think this is a film that sort of, like I said, it sort of wants to be seen and to be seen and interacted with by people of a particular faith bend. So I won't go too into the weeds on the characterization of Thomas for the sake of spoilers, but it you do get the sense, and it's sort of revealed as the story goes on, that he's a complicated character whose motivations are not necessarily as pure as he makes out to be at the very beginning of the film. But that's something to be discovered as the story goes on. The story itself began life as a play written by Samuel D. Hunter. So the same guy who wrote the screenplay wrote the play that the screenplay is based upon. And that's actually very rare to see. But it means that there is a kind of purity with regard to the source material that is maintained that you just don't see in many other adaptations. And the original play, the character of Thomas, is a Mormon missionary. In the film adaptation, Thomas has been changed to be an evangelical Christian. Now, there are no doubt going to be detractors, and I have seen some Christian reviewers say that the film is this all-out assault on conservative Christian values, but that really is not the case. It's a little more complex than that. The choice to make Thomas an evangelical Christian was a conscious choice made by Hunter. He has talked about this at length in numerous interviews, but it had nothing to do, in the author's own words, it has nothing really to do with an attack against conservative Christianity. He actually made the change in order to bring the story more into line with his own life, meaning that Hunter grew up in Moscow, Idaho, attending a Christian school surrounded by many fundamentalist and evangelical Christians. In at least one interview, and many of these references can be found in the article, in at least one interview, he stated that the choice to make Thomas a Mormon in the original play was a kind of act of self-protection. It was some degrees removed from his own experience and therefore a little bit safer for him to write. With the film, however, he made the choice to lean into his own experience, having grown up in Christian circles, and made Thomas an evangelical Christian. He has also said that so much of the play, and therefore the film, was influenced by his experience growing up in those circles, as someone who struggled with homosexuality and as someone who sort of had the realization that simply praying vigorously did not result in God expunging his sexual desires. And that, of course, is reflected in the film through one of the major storylines. So in a lot of ways, the film is a more honest story to what Hunter wanted to originally write than the original play itself. And I think that's fairly interesting.
I think it's interesting too, in that when I saw the character come on screen and be described as like a Christian missionary, I almost immediately wondered if that character was supposed to be Mormon, because in Idaho, Mormons make up about 25% of the population, and it's like the third state in terms of the amount of people who are LDS. You know, obviously Utah is number one, but Idaho is number three, and there's quite a few Mormons in Idaho. So I think that's interesting, you know, after post seeing the film, realizing that the playwright actually was in a situation growing up that was evangelical, not Mormon. So I did think that was interesting. And the playwright himself, I mean, it's a semi-autobiographical.
Oh, absolutely.
Treatise. Yeah. I mean, he is, you know, he describes himself at that time, you know, as being closeted. Now he is, you know, very much of an out gay man. And also, you know, you talked about the main character, Charlie, being morbidly obese. And in kind of bios I've read of Hunter, he struggled with his weight quite a bit and considered him, now probably not as much as Charlie, who's very much exaggerated for the film's purposes, but that he himself struggled with being quite heavy.
Yeah, like you said, it's very much in a way a kind of an autobiographical piece in different shades. And regarding the character of Thomas and the Mormon evangelical connection there, you can sort of, like you said, when he first shows up, you almost sort of expect him to kind of be like a Mormon or a Jehovah's Witness, because he shows up on a bike, I think it is, with the look that you would associate with a Mormon or a Jehovah's Witness.
Right. He's wearing a suit.
Yeah, he is. And so what's funny to me, you really just don't find, you know, door knocker Christians that much anymore. I know they're out there, and I'm sure they wouldn't take kindly to saying, well, they're not there. So I know they're out there. But there's a reason that the stereotype for the ones who knock on your doors are not, you know, evangelical Christians. It's a Mormon or a Jehovah's Witness. You just don't see that kind of thing really happening anymore in evangelical circles. But when he shows up, they still sort of have him in the trappings, the tropes, if you will, of a Mormon missionary, but his specific faith has sort of been changed in the film to that of an evangelical Christian, despite the imagery being that you might normally associate with a Mormon or a Jehovah's Witness. So I just think that's kind of an interesting parallel.
We are so grateful if you would consider partnering with us by, you know, doing all the things, which would be including giving us a tip, which you can do at our website, equip.org. It's easy to find the link for that. Go to any landing page for any episode of the Postmodern Realities podcast, and you can find a link there. And it helps us bring you all this fresh new content that's brand new every week through interviews with our authors and new article content on our website. Plus, if you could give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Now, I say this all the time, but we would be really grateful, because there hasn't really been that many new ratings for us, and this is the way that people find out about us. And as you know, we have a wealth of back episodes, more than 300 of them, because this is episode 335, and there's so much to discover, especially if you're a new listener. So thanks for listening to the podcast, and now back to our conversation with Cole Burgett. Well, I want to ask you a little bit more about some of the characters in this film. And as we noted earlier, Brendan Fraser received quite a bit of critical acclaim, as well as an Oscar for a performance by an actor in a leading role for Charlie. And I just want to ask you a little bit about Charlie. So can you specifically talk about this character and his motivations? I mean, we've already mentioned that he is morbidly obese and he's teaching some classes online. And what I found interesting about this character was, I think you would expect him to be very bitter because, you know, of course, as I said at the beginning, this will be spoiler-filled, so it is going to be a spoiler-filled discussion. So if you haven't seen it yet and want to, go watch it and come back to our discussion. But, you know, you would expect him to be quite bitter and angry, and he doesn't really come across that way. It's fascinating.
Yeah, Charlie is a character who is eating himself to death, literally. But all of this is motivated by guilt, rooted in the fact that he left his wife and daughter to be with Alan, a gay man who was the son of the pastor of a conservative mega church called New Life. Now, just for the sake of tying the knots and closing these circles, this is the same church that Thomas the missionary is from. So you can see how there's some good tension in the storyline there. So when Alan's parents learned that he was gay, he was ostracized from the family and the church, which led to a crippling depression and his eventual suicide. And Charlie's eating disorder began as a means of coping with this. Now, this is usually as deep as most Christian critics I've read go with the narrative and its themes. The general consensus is that this film seems to be some kind of attack on the church and Christianity, but that really does miss the point, I think, of what Hunter is doing. The film certainly takes a particular flavor of Christianity to task, but this is not a film that celebrates what Charlie did. It is most certainly not a film that somehow advocates for Charlie leaving his family because he simply feels a certain way about an individual of the same sex. There seems to be a serious misreading that does not take into account the fact that the central conflict of the film is the one between Charlie and his estranged daughter, who is rightfully very angry with him for breaking up the family. The film never positions Charlie as heroic for what he did. In fact, it really sets up the opposite. Charlie's arc in the film is going from someone who is simply coping with the loss of someone close to him through self-medication to someone who is capable of acknowledging his mistakes in spite of his feelings. This is what lies behind the really well-acted scene that you can see in the trailer between Charlie and Mary, his ex-wife, where they are discussing their daughter, and Charlie tells her that he needs to know that he has done one thing right with his life. What is driving this character is guilt, the weight of a lifetime of mistakes that in the moment seemed like the right thing to do, but were in hindsight quite selfish. And just to clarify, when he makes that statement that he needs to know he's done just one thing right with his life, he's not talking about leaving his family for Alan. He's talking about his daughter and repairing this relationship with her. And he has to come around to the realization that what he did, despite how he felt, was quite selfish. Charlie has to wake up to that. There is no question that he loved Alan and that it was genuine, that the feelings he felt were genuine, but that doesn't make it right. And it certainly gives him no right to shatter his family simply because of a powerful emotion. In fact, that is why Ellie, his daughter, is so incredibly angry. And the very thing that Charlie is working to remedy. Now, that doesn't make this an explicitly Christian film, but it does read like a film written from someone, by someone, who has a kind of understanding of the Christian faith that most mainstream films seem to lack. And this, of course, is reinforced by Hunter's background. But it does mean the film is quite complex in the way that most mainstream films are not, especially when it comes to navigating matters of religious conviction. And as far as Charlie's character goes, like you mentioned, you would expect someone in this position to be very bitter. And that is not Charlie. He is very much set up as a kind of tragic figure who sort of has to see the good in people. He sort of has to be empathetic. It's actually one of the ways that he copes with what has happened. He refuses to see evil in other people, almost detrimentally so. But he refuses to see, to give up hope on his daughter, on other people. Very much as a reaction to all that had happened with Alan. And it's just a very interesting characterization for a character, like you said, that has every right to be embittered, but is not.
One of the main themes that I see in this film is this idea of Charlie's desire for people to be truly honest. And I don't know, not just for his students, his writing students, he talks to them about that online, but he, in his daughter's just rage against him, her life, the last, you know, it seems like almost 10 years of her life. And she kind of starts coming back to her. So she's been suspended from school and she is coming, you know, she comes to see him and I guess her mom doesn't know that she's coming and they set up a kind of agreement, like, I'll try to get you back to school, into school. I'll write your essay for you kind of thing. And he asks her to write some things down in a journal and she just writes, you know, typical teenager, I hate everybody. And her mother is saying that she's just her mother is characterizing her as a truly evil person. But even in her hatred, Charlie sees some honesty there, and he just wants people to be honest, which is fascinating because I don't know if he's being honest with himself about the condition that he's in. But I wonder, why is that so important to him? Because you have to remember, this is the last week of his life. Is he wanting people to be honest in these last few days because he knows he won't be around very much longer and he wants to know that his life mattered?
Well, I certainly think that the theme of honesty, it runs throughout both the play and the film, in part because Hunter's great conviction when he sat down to write the play was that he himself said he wanted to write something honest, which is where a lot of the autobiographical stuff comes into play. He wanted to write something that was very honest with regards to his own emotional experience and his own childhood, and that's exactly what he did. But within the context of the film and the narrative there, I think you've hit on something when you mentioned that Charlie has a great desire for honesty from other people. But it's ironic that he is not being entirely honest with himself throughout the film. Bear in mind that when he teaches his college writing course, he sits there with the camera off and he lies to his students that his camera has simply broken, that it hasn't been fixed, it can't get it fixed. But the truth of the matter is he just doesn't turn the camera on because he doesn't want anyone to see him, which sort of leads to the film's climax. One of the scenes in the film's climax is when he finally turns the camera on after he's sort of been told that he's going to be fired, he's going to be let go. So he turns the camera on and just sort of has a moment with his students of brutal honesty, encouraging them to be honest, to write something honest for a change. So I think what you've picked up on is sort of the irony, the tragic irony that lies at the heart of Charlie's character, where the desire to see honesty in other people is really a desire to be honest with himself, which is really where his character leads to. Again, it's that same motivation, that guilt, the needing to admit that he was wrong despite how he felt, that leads to that very powerful scene where he says, you know, he sort of screams through tears at his ex-wife that he needs to know before he's dead that he has managed to do just one thing right. The implication there is that every other decision he has made has been the wrong one, from leaving his family to going with Alan. He was wrong to do it. And now he's trying to put the pieces back together in a way that says he's just done one thing right. And I think that's very honest, really. It's a very honest sort of look at a human life. And I think I've mentioned on this podcast before, I've worked at length with men who are coming out of prison with a prison ministry in Dallas, Texas. Very wonderful little scrappy prison ministry. I love him to death. And many of the people we worked with were people who I think would resonate with what Charlie says there. They've come out of prison, and the reason they come to our program is because they have nowhere else to go. We never targeted men who, you know, had families, who had a support system. We went after people who had none of that. That's where we could step in and show Christ, if you will, to these people, or at least point them toward Christ. And I think they would, many of the people I've worked with over the years would resonate with what Charlie is saying, that despite a lifetime of terrible decisions, they need to know that they've done just one thing right, whether it's a repaired relationship, whether it's getting back on their feet, whatever it is. It's a very honest expression when looking at it from the context of real human experience.
One of the other main characters in this film is a nurse by the name of Liz, portrayed by Hong Chau, who actually got an Oscar nomination for a supporting actress for this role in The Whale. And it's interesting. At first, we just think, oh, this is some nurse assigned to him to look in on him because he can't do a lot of things for himself because he's morbidly obese. So people know he can barely move in this portrayal of Charlie in this film. He's supposed to be like 600 pounds. So he's more than just overweight. He's like morbidly obese. He can barely move type of a thing. I mean, one scene shows, you know, he drops something on the floor and he has to use like one of those grabbers. He can't even pick it up. So this character played by Hong Chau, Liz, it turns out that she's a friend. And it also turns out that she's the adopted daughter of the senior minister at New Life Church. And she is quite bitter against the church. And she says that she's the black sheep of her family. And you've mentioned this character named Alan, who's just off screen. We never know. We just know he was Charlie's partner and former student. And we also know that he killed himself for an opposite reason. He stopped eating and then killed himself. So it's kind of opposite of what's happening with Charlie, who's eating himself to death. And so I don't know if Liz feels guilty, but it seems like we talked about honesty, but I think that, and you mentioned earlier that there's just this guilt that hangs heavy in the whole film. Like every single character, from Charlie's ex-wife to even We Never Meet Alan, just his overwhelming sense of guilt in terms of being in a relationship with Charlie and then also being the son of a pastor. And even Charlie himself, I think he has, I don't know if that he was ever a Christian that the film portrays him, but he did interact with New Life. And, you know, when the missionary comes to the door, he said, I've read all the pamphlets. I'm very familiar with this church. And so I think it's very fascinating that all of these characters are somehow related, but they all in their own way have this big, heavy burden of guilt.
Yeah, regarding the character of Liz, I don't know that it's, I could be wrong on this, but the way that I read it the one time that I saw it several months ago, I don't think it's guilt that's necessarily motivating her. I think she is, we talked about, you sort of expect Charlie to be embittered. She is that embittered character. She sort of brings out the angry tension of the piece opposite Charlie's daughter.
Yeah, I don't think Liz has guilt, but I think that she's saying her brother Alan had guilt.
Oh, absolutely.
That's why he killed himself.
Yeah, because of the church.
She's angry. Mm-hmm. And she's saying to Charlie, why aren't you angry?
Yes.
And then she's telling the missionary, this church messed up my brother.
Yep.
And vicariously has messed up Charlie because now he's so,
right,
not just feeling guilt, but just in sorrow. He's like paralyzed.
Right.
He can't do anything anymore.
Yeah, Liz very much is the character who does hold the church responsible, and in a sense, her own family responsible for not just what happened to Alan, but what Charlie is going through and what therefore she is going through. So there's an element of rage there at how the church and her family sort of ostracized Alan as a result of his homosexual proclivities. And, you know, that's a whole can of worms that one can talk about, but is sort of in the peripherals of this film, save for the one conversation she has with Thomas, which is really there to sort of give the viewer the full picture, if you will, to sort of fill in some of the gaps. That's that particular emotion is not the core of the film. And what's interesting to me is that it seems that when I read reviews from Christians, they sort of take that emotion and make it the centerpiece of the film, when that really is not the case. The film is not about Liz. It is about Charlie, and it is about his relationship with Ellie. And I just find that very interesting, the seeming lack of contextual reading of the piece. But I also would like to talk just very briefly about the way Charlie interacts with Liz, the way he interacts with these characters like Thomas and Ellie and Mary, his ex-wife, and then the pizza guy. As we've said, he's sort of driven by empathy, by a kind of desire to see the best in these people, even when they don't see the best in themselves. And he's sort of, his anger has been spent, if that makes sense. You know, we do get the sense that he has interacted with Faith on some level. Again, there's the line when Thomas shows up on his doorstep. Charlie says, you know, I've read everything this church has ever published. I've read everything they've ever put out. He doesn't really give context to that statement. That context comes much later. But even when Thomas sort of turns confrontational with some pretty wild accusations toward the end of the film, Charlie never lashes out, which you expect him to do. He maintains a kind of compassion and empathy throughout the piece that is key. And even with someone like Liz, who just can't understand why Charlie isn't lashing out. She says there needs to be anger. There needs to be some kind of expressing of emotion. And that emotion eventually does come out. But again, it is not directed at Alan. It is directed at his daughter. And I think that is very, very telling. And it is a serious misreading of this film to take it and run it the other direction.
I actually, you know, the film, it's kind of like this big spoiler, like this big reveal, because the entire time, and I don't want to spoil it because I think that is one spoiler I want to keep quiet, but the entire time certain things are happening and you think it has to do with Alan. And at the very end of the movie, you realize, and it's so moving, it had nothing to do with Alan at all. It had to do with his daughter. And his daughter is portrayed by Sadie Sink as one of the most despicable teenagers you would ever come across.
Yeah, you actually kind of get the sense, and I mentioned this earlier, but you really do kind of get the sense that Charlie is almost, to her detriment, he refuses to see badness in her. You're absolutely right. In terms of characters, she truly is one of the most despicable young adults I think I have ever seen portrayed in a film. There is nothing that even remotely resembles a redemption in this character.
Oh, no, I don't feel like there's any redemption where she's involved at all.
And her mother even says that. Her mother even says the word, she is evil through and through. But Charlie just refuses to see that. And you're absolutely right. It's fascinating.
Is it almost kind of a, not in the same way because it's not a comedy, but it's not a naiveness, but I was thinking it's like this overly sunshiny Ted Lasso. Like, is he not recognizing what a terrible kid this is? Because he keeps telling her, you're a good person. Or does he really want to? Is he not really dealing with the circumstances? That's what I was wondering, because it's almost like that Ted Lasso, like, hey, everybody's great, even the people who are really mean to me.
What's interesting is that is the beautiful complexity of this film, is that right there. where you watch it and you really do question, and it's so wonderfully ambiguous. Is Charlie intentionally being naive? Because you can't not see it, and it's even pointed out to him much later on in the film. If you remember that scene where the mother has to sort of reveal, or maybe it's Liz, I can't remember. It's been months since I've seen this film. One of the characters reveals to Charlie the sort of deception of his daughter and the stuff that she has said about him on social media and pictures she has posted about him and things that she has written that are just terrible, terrible things. But even with that evidence staring him in the face, he refuses to become angry. And you watch it, and like I said, at some point he really needed to snap. You know, someone really needed to snap on this child because of the monster she was morphing into. But that's part of the powerful message that the film makes. Like you said, you think all this has to do with Alan, and it doesn't. It has everything to do with his daughter. And in the last moments of his life, Charlie is, it's not that he's able to win her. I think that's too strong of a word for it, and it reduces the ambiguity of her character. But something breaks through to her. And it's something that could never have come were it not for Charlie's absolutely relentless pursuit of her, despite everything she is. And I think that's it's very moving. I think it absolutely connects with people, especially parents. But there is a kind of naiveness to his character, but it's a willing naiveness. And because it's a willing naiveness, I don't even know that you can call it naivety. It's sort of an intentional, I think part of it, I look at the film and I read it this way. I think there is a part of him that simply cannot accept this about her. Again, because of what he says to his wife, that he needs to know he has done just one thing right with his life. And that one thing is repairing this relationship with his daughter. And I think for Charlie to accept that his daughter is too far gone, as everyone else seems to think, it is a giving up on life itself. And he refuses to do that until life is taken from him, really.
I think he sees, I think it was his ex-wife that shows him these terrible things online and pictures she's posted, because you see her every time she comes in the apartment, she's just always taking these photos. And there's a scene in which she's also taking photos of Thomas that comes through too. But what Charlie says to her that he admires about her while she's being just really a wretched person is that she is honest. She has the strength to tell people like it is. That's his interpretation of her behavior. So I find that very interesting. But one thing I want to ask you about is one of the characters that we mentioned that, you know, in the play was a Mormon missionary, but here is an evangelical missionary, supposedly from this church, New Life Church. And that is just the interaction between Charlie and Thomas, and of course, the way that the film is trying to have us think about faith that's a little bit more complex, and especially in the context of Charlie's homosexuality and his relationship that he had with Alan, which he says before Alan's death were like, those were the truly happy years that he had. That and a memory when his daughter was little, when they all went on vacation to the beach with his ex-wife before he was obese. And so how does the whale treat faith and homosexuality, given the backstory even of the screenwriter and the playwright?
Yeah, I just want to jump on this one scene you mentioned very quickly. It is very telling in this film that sort of the last images that play through Charlie's mind, as it were, are those images on the beach with his daughter and his wife and not Alan. That is so key to this film and to reading this film accurately. But there is an ongoing conversation in the film between Thomas and Charlie regarding faith and salvation that really culminates with Thomas appealing to Charlie to be saved. But in the midst of this great appeal, Thomas suggests to Charlie that the reason Alan died was because he was a practicing homosexual. And any headway that Thomas had made with Charlie up to that point really ceases because of how Charlie hears what he's saying, essentially blaming Alan's homosexuality and therefore his feelings for Charlie and ultimately Charlie himself for Alan taking his own life. That is where the lines of communication break down. There is a clear and distinct lack of empathy in Thomas's appeal, and empathy really does lie at the heart of this film. Charlie is a character who is extremely compassionate, too compassionate to a degree, but he frequently finds himself on the receiving end of many, many justified attacks, you know, whether those come from his angry daughter or his prickly caretaker or Thomas the missionary. Yet we never see Charlie lashing out. We never see him explode. And honestly, that's part of the tension of the film. You go through it sort of expecting Charlie to retaliate in some way, but he doesn't. He really sort of bears the brunt of many of the accusations against him and his failures, in part because he knows that the accusations are true and justified, and it feeds into his guilt. And that is one of the things I find so interesting about this film, that I have yet to see any Christian reviewer really tackle. The idea that Charlie seems to actually understand that what he did with Alan was wrong. But whereas compassion is what Charlie needs most, he is ultimately the character who gives it most freely. Now let's be clear, Hunter himself, the writer, is married to a man, so this film is not a diatribe on homosexuality as a sin. However, it certainly does have a kind of moral center that acknowledges the wrongness of what Charlie did despite his feelings toward Alan. It is wrong as far as the film is concerned because of how Charlie wronged his wife and daughter, and his choice to be with Alan is framed as a kind of betrayal of this nuclear family. Again, the last image he sees is the images of that beach with his wife and his kid, and Alan is nowhere in the picture. Where the film really whiffs doctrinally, to even talk about it in those terms, is that lack of recognition as homosexuality as a sin, even though that suggestion is certainly laced throughout some of the dialogue, and perhaps it is too much to expect a film to actually address that notion in any kind of meaningful and intelligent way from a Christian standpoint. There is the real complexity of the issue that Charlie's feelings for Alan were genuine, honest feelings, but his choice to act on those feelings destroyed his family and is therefore the source of his guilt and shame. The film does not shy away from those things, and there is talk of sin, but there is no real analysis of what sin actually is, which I think is symptomatic of the broader culture and probably why it is so hard for some people to hear the viewpoint of homosexuality as sinful. There has been, by and large, a redefinition of sin. We use the word playfully. It's the kind of word we see plastered on marketing for lingerie or chocolates, reinforcing the idea that sin is something naughty. It's something just a little scandalous, but also kind of interesting. It's tantalizing. And when we collectively lean into that idea of sin as just a naughty little thing, which Western culture at large absolutely has swallowed hook, line, and sinker, then we begin a slow redefinition of right and wrong that we've seen being manifested for the last couple centuries in Western thought. It's why we find it scandalous when someone begins to suggest that homosexuality is sinful. It's this naughty little thing. No, that is certainly not how the Bible presents it. And anyone who says that the Bible does not discuss homosexuality or talk about homosexuality, I mean, obviously cannot read. It does, and it does so in black and white terms in Genesis especially, and again in Romans, both Old and New Testament. Now, you might not like what the Bible says about the topic or how it frames homosexuality as a sin according to a very different definition of sin from a naughty little thing. But what you cannot do is say the Bible never talks about it. It absolutely does. And anyone with a basic reading level can figure that out if you just read it. No reading between the lines, just a simple, plain reading of the text will get you there. And one wishes the whale had been able to articulate that aspect of the conversation just a little more, especially in the interaction with Thomas and Charlie at the end. But again, maybe it's too much to expect that of a film.
I think when I first saw Thomas the missionary, the character, come in, I thought in my mind, oh, here we go again. You know, someone's going to just bash religion. But its portrayal of Christianity I found to be a little bit more nuanced, especially dealing with Thomas himself. I won't get into all the particulars, and it comes out in his daughter comes across Thomas when she's visiting her dad, when she's visiting Charlie, and some things happen where you find out that Charlie actually is not from the New Life Church. He's a runaway, and he was on a mission trip, and, you know, he had come to religion because he was, you know, a kid that was involved in a lot of, you know, quote unquote bad things. He was a pothead. He smoked pot a lot, etc. And then it comes out where he ends up, some different circumstances happen with Charlie's daughter, who kind of posts about him online or something. But through those things that she did, it ends up actually reuniting Thomas with his family. And instead of judging him, they offer him forgiveness, for he had been stealing money from his church group and he was smoking pot and all this stuff. So that was a little bit of a surprising twist, that here are these people who called themselves Christians. And the reason why he got involved in this mission work was because his dad was trying to have some kind of, I guess, discipline for him because he had been smoking pot and doing these things. And yet, even though in the face of that, his parents, who were Christians, forgave him. So I thought that was kind of fascinating, little kind of portrayal of Christianity in the film.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the parts I you don't want to go too much into the weeds to, just because it is one of the more interesting twists and one of the more nuanced portrayals of Christians than I think we've seen in cinema in a good bit. Every character in this film is flawed in some way, shape, form, or fashion, in a very pronounced way. And everyone sort of has a mask that they hide behind, that when it is shed, you see flaws in all. And that's especially true of Thomas, who has the look of a strict, uptight, starch-collared evangelist. But then the second that gets excavated, and it's very telling that it's Charlie's daughter who is able to bring this out, in the moment that that's excavated, you see that it's all sort of a show. That's not quite who he is. And his faith is sort of genuine in a very naive sort of way. He is one of the more naive characters in the film. But it's not a faith that comes from a place of holier than thou, I think I'm better than you, which is generally the portrayal of Christians of this flavor in mainstream Hollywood films. Instead, his faith comes from a place almost of desperation. He's faithful because it suits him at first. He's a bit of a con artist, really. He's faithful because, seemingly faithful because it suits him at first, but it is something that grows into, I think, something genuine by the end of the film, because she sort of does to him what she does to Charlie and posts these terrible pictures of him online. But it actually, like you said, it reunites him with his family. They are able to find him because of it. And it's sort of the opposite reaction, you think. It's the exact opposite reaction of what happens with Alan, where his family reach out to him and want to forgive him and want him to come home. And that really changes things for his character.
You know, this film kind of tackles a lot of like current contemporary themes, from religion and homosexuality and gay marriage and social media, is it good kind of thing. It can be used for such destructive things. And it's kind of dealing with these hot topics right now. So because of that, do you think film critics have misread the movie, and maybe even Christian film critics especially? Do you think people of faith will read about it and just make some assumptions about the film of the topics it deals with?
Yeah, absolutely. I've read a ton of reviews of the film. I've read a lot of interviews with Hunter and Aronofsky and Brendan Fraser. Watched a lot on that just because I'm curious how people are receiving this film. I don't think it's a perfect film by any stretch of the imagination, and I've just talked at length about it. I think it has a serious issue in how it handles sin and framing the homosexuality conversation around that. That being said, it is a film that absolutely wants to interact with people of faith. And that is a rarity today. I don't think we understand just how rare that is to find a film that invites conversation, that actively goes out of its way to interact with people of faith in a bit of a nuanced way that isn't just religion is bad. I mean, that stuff's kind of a cliche at this point. It's really rather boring. But this film is very different from those. And because it is so mired in the trappings of the now, social media, homosexuality, because it's so caught in those trappings, which I think, you know, is why people should see it in a lot of ways, because it's so of the now, it's going to lead to the film being seriously misread. People, and I've already seen that, and especially in the Christian reviews that I've seen, as I mentioned before, they sort of take the perspective that Liz has and they soundbite that. They take her issues with the church, which she tells Thomas about in one scene in the film, and they stretch that into an argument that is what the entire film is about. And again, that simply is not the case. I don't know how you can watch the film all the way through contextually and then come out with that idea. It's really not. It's a very complex and very nuanced film that is far more about Charlie repairing his relationship with a very, very angry daughter than it is about Charlie and Alan. Even though that's a huge part of the conversation, it's not the point of it. So yeah, I do think, unfortunately, the film will be misread and misunderstood. And I actually think you see that reflected in a lot of the critical reviews. As you mentioned, this is a film that won 2 Oscars. And yet when you look at the critical rating, if you care about that sort of thing on Rotten Tomatoes, which I just despise, but if you care about that sort of thing, it has very mixed reviews. It's not what they call now certified fresh, which is just dumb, but it doesn't have that rating. Critics are sort of divided on the film. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it even a true film? It's a bit more like a play. It's kind of a character study. Is it a religious film? People don't know what to do with it. So I think it's absolutely being misread, but I think everyone sort of agrees that, you know, Brendan Fraser absolutely knocks it out of the park in this film. And really, it's worth seeing just for him alone.
Now, some well-known Christian film critics have couched this film as very anti-Christian and its message that Christianity is evil and the gospel in this film is all about, you know, being true to your authentic self, aka your queer identity. And do you think that some of those Christian critics have really misread it? I mean, are there aspects of this film that are saying that you need to be, you know, we talked about his honesty, but some of that has been interpreted by Christian critics as being honest about who you are. Do you think that's not quite the reading that this film should be given?
Absolutely not. If that was the film, then the film would have been about him and Alan and their meeting and Alan killing himself. And it's not. The whole film is about the fallout of that and Charlie coming to terms with the fact that what he did was wrong, not necessarily because homosexuality is a sin. There's no real discussion of that dimension of the issue. If it is, it's sort of shut down fairly quickly. The film is about Charlie realizing that what he did was wrong because it destroyed his family and just trying to pick the pieces back up. So, I don't think that's what the film is about at all. And again, I think that's very fairly summed up. And Charlie has lied to himself and said, you know, his years with Alan were the best of his life. But the fact of the matter is, the last scene that fires through his brain as he dies is that of his daughter and his wife on a beach.
Now, I do want to go back to what you talked about earlier, because we're talking about this last scene. And in your review article that you wrote for our journal, you talk about the thesis of the film being about, you know, him doing one thing right in his life with his daughter to try to reconcile with her, even though she's really kind of, like we said, despicable. And on the one hand, there's some critics that have said, like I just mentioned, that this is very anti-Christian film about being honesty meaning being true to yourself. Although if you watch the film, I did not get that impression about the meaning of honesty in that way.
Absolutely not. I agree with
you. He wanted just someone to say something that was true, even though he himself was not being honest about a few things, even with his friend Liz, that he was keeping some things hidden from her. In other words, you get the impression that he's like living on abject poverty and can't afford medical care when that can't be further from the truth. He has a really pretty large nest egg that he saved for his daughter because he really cares about her. But On the other flip side, there's some critics who have characterized Charlie and this film as a Christ-like figure, like a metaphor for Christ. And so what do you think about that reading of the film? Do you think that this film suggests that Charlie is a Christ type of figure?
Yeah, so the discussion of Christ types, just to couch this question just a tad for people who may not be too familiar with it. In literary studies, there's the idea of a Christ type, a character in a work whose life, whose experiences parallel that of Christ. And it's usually not so much in personality, it's more in terms of events. Do the events and stages of this person's life sort of in a way mirror the narrative of Christ in Scripture? A very good example of this for those who have read the book is Jack Schaefer's Shane. The character of Shane is one of the most pronounced Christ figures in sort of modern American literature. I actually have my college students read that book as the capstone of a course, a literature course I put together, and just had several students in the high school read it for some extra credit. And we've had some great conversations about Christ types along those lines. Regarding Charlie in this film being a Christ type, I think the way you've ask the question is very good. I think the film certainly suggests Christ-type imagery, and I think that's very intentional because faith is a central part of this film, and not just any faith, but specifically the evangelical Christian flavor. And when you look at this Charlie's life in this last week, it is very much a kind of passion week as Charlie is leading up to his death, which is handled in a very fascinating way. But this last week of his life, you really see the struggle that Charlie goes through of being the only man really in the picture who is full of compassion and is more than willing to show that compassion, even when no one else is willing to show it in turn. He sort of goes out on the sacrificial altar, so to speak, having really eaten himself to death, but having won his daughter in a sense in the very, very end, or at least won a part of her, reached some part of her that no one thought was possible of reaching. He was able to do that. So, you know, to be very clear, talking about Christ type imagery is not to say that it is a one-to-one corollary. You know, Godzilla is a Christ figure and King of the Monsters. Just again, it's not a one-to-one corollary, but there is a sort of parallel between Charlie's life and the way the story is structured and the events of the story that do sort of echo, if you will, the events of Christ's, the last week of Christ's earthly life before his resurrection. So yeah, I think there's some merit there to seeing Charlie as a Christ figure. And just to be clear, that doesn't make the film a Christian film. Secular writers use Christ imagery all the time because they understand it's powerful and people gravitate toward it. But yeah, I do think it's there, and I think it's intentional on Hunter's part.
I just want to end our conversation about revisiting the question about if Christians should watch this film or be wary of it. I would say that the language is very much of a hard R. And at the very beginning, opening scene, when you realize what's happening, I just fast-forwarded through that. It's not long, but there is a implied scene with someone viewing pornography and solo sex. So if somebody realizes that that's happening, you can fast-forward that. But besides all of that, is this film, you know, is there something that Christians should be aware of? And also, is there anything that could be maybe detrimental to people if they don't view this carefully. And like we talked about, there's various different interpretations of a viewing from Christians of this film.
Yeah. Is this a film that Christians should watch? Again, I'm very much of the camp that this is something, you know, Christians, especially Christian parents, have to decide for themselves. It's very hard to give a blanket answer to that kind of question. That being said, this is absolutely a film that Christians should consider viewing because it's so eager to interact with faith. And it, frankly, it's a small film. I think it had a $3 million budget, and it's still better made than much of the drivel that is out there now. So I think it's a film that Christians should absolutely consider viewing. That being said, I think it's a film that has to be viewed very carefully. It has to be viewed and read contextually. It has to be read and viewed with a careful, careful eye, because we've seen already that when you just go in soundbiting this film, or if you go in with a ton of reviews already sort of rolling through your head about what this film is about, you're probably going to come away with a misreading of the movie. That could lead to some dangerous conclusions, especially the idea that, you know, what Charlie did with Alan was somehow right. I mean, not even the film really seems to hold that view, but yet people are walking out with that sort of reading. I will say that when I saw the film, it was very early on in theaters, and I had heard about it simply because of Brendan Fraser. But I didn't know what the movie was about. I had never read the play. I first caught wind of it back when Fraser received the standing ovation, the 6-minute standing ovation at the Venice Film Festival. And I sort of knew, I thought that was kind of interesting. I like Brendan Fraser. I'd seen him in The Mummy and, you know, as a kid, George in the Jungle, stuff like that. But the Mummy movies I liked. And he kind of fell off the radar, and it was sort of always rooting for him. Wanted to see what he could do, especially with this film. So I went into the movie blind, really, not knowing what it was about, not having read any of the reviews. I didn't even know that I was thinking it was receiving universal acclaim because of the response it was receiving from audiences. It wasn't until much later when we started talking about it for this review that I paid attention to the reviews and started reading things and saw that it wasn't universally beloved. But I went in.
Oh, it got a lot of terrible secular reviews.
Yeah, I saw that. I was amazed, which just goes to show you when, you know, no one can agree on it, it's probably doing something interesting. You should see it. So should Christians watch it? I think they should actually consider watching it. That being said, don't see it unless you're an adult. Certainly maybe not see it with your kids. And if you do take your kid to see it, like I said, I know a Christian mom who took her kid to see it and ended up having a wonderful conversation, very fascinating conversation about it. But this is an older, mature, young adult, 17, 18, around there, 16, 17, 18. So do it carefully, watch it thoughtfully. But I certainly think it's a film worth considering.
Well, on a much lighter note, I have a fun question for Cole. And Cole, it was just Easter this last weekend. What is one of your first Easter memories from when you were a little kid?
One of my first Easter memories. Oh, goodness. Probably some kind of Easter egg hunt at a church. I'm sure makes some Christians squirm. Yes, probably something like that.
Well, thanks, Cole, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
It is always a pleasure being here. Thank you.
You've been listening to episode 335 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest was Cole Burgett. He is a regular contributor to the Christian Research Journal, and he has written an in-depth movie review of the Oscar-winning film, The Whale. And his review is called Let Faith Oust Fact, a review of The Whale. You can read it for free at our website, equip.org. Stay connected with the Christian Research Institute and all the new content we have coming your way. The best way to do that is to head on over to our website, equip.org. There you will find thousands of free resources right at your fingertips, from articles to video to audio, and it's all for free. You'll find our podcasts hosted there, as well as the Bible Answer Man broadcast, which is hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and streams live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. In addition, you don't want to miss out on subscribing to Hank Unplugged, which is the podcast of Hank Hanegraaff. And in that podcast, he has really in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people. And in addition, he has a new series on his podcast feed called Hank Unplugged Shorts, which Hank goes into the headlines in the mainstream media and refutes a lot of those cultural issues that we have in these short podcast episodes. And there's quite a few of them. You don't want to miss out on them. Now, if you want to find some of this at other places where it's all in one place, really subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's a great way to get all of our content there, our podcasts there, and different individual questions theologically that people have that Hank answers at our YouTube channel. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, I don't know how to subscribe to YouTube. I don't have a YouTube account. Well, actually, you might just have a YouTube account. If you have a Gmail address, you have a YouTube account. Just log into YouTube with your Gmail address and search for Bible Answer Man channel, and please become one of our subscribers. In addition, if you see that bell icon right there on our front page, please click that, and every time that we have new content, you will receive a notification that new content is up on our channel for you to be able to consume. So thank you so much for the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute. We are grateful for you listening and reading and watching.